Hey everybody, on this episode of Bowlit, we talked some movies and some music. The movies we talked about included Infinity War and Solo, so heavy spoiler warning for those. If you haven't seen Infinity War, that conversation goes from about the 5:30 mark to the 15:45 mark. If you haven't seen Solo, that goes from about 15:45 to 26:30. So, yeah, you should probably just listen to that part anyway, because spoilers are stupid. All right, enjoy the show. To episode 7 of Burritos and Other Less Important Things. I'm Chris in San Diego.
I'm Zach in New York.
How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a little less eventful than the last time I spoke to you, so I will happily take a nice, easy, quiet month over some chaos.
So speaking of, by far, our least listened to episode is the episode entitled "Zach Didn't Die in a Fire." So apparently our listeners don't want to hear anything about how you didn't die in a fire.
You gave away the crucial piece of information in the title. Didn't you ever learn how to write a lead?
Zach may have died in a fire, question mark.
Exactly.
You won't believe what happened to Zach this weekend.
We need to clickbait these podcast titles better. And I think that's on you. I'm going to blame you for that one.
Hey, I kind of like our titles, but I'm also partial
to them
because
not
I wrote
working.
Them. Well, the other ones did. That one just didn't. Apparently, I don't think anyone's just interested in anything that's going on in your life.
That's completely fair. I'll give you that one. I have no rebuttal for that.
It was a little mean, but kind
of
true, right?
Mean but true. After how many years of friendship, I think I can take something like that from you.
At least 14, 15 years, something like that.
Yeah, that seems about right. But there's big news on your front.
Oh yeah, I finally started my job.
Congratulations.
So that's the reason for our 1 month layoff.
Yeah.
Probably should have spaced out a couple of those episodes so we didn't have such a long layoff between episodes, but
our listener is waiting with bated breath.
Sorry, listener. I'm working as an aerospace engineer for the Navy, doing repairs on fighter jets.
I am not, so I'm glad one of us has that covered.
Somebody's got to do it. I now go to sleep really early and wake up really early, and it's kind of annoying. So finding time to do podcasts and edit podcasts is going to be a little more difficult than it once was.
I'm just glad that the time difference is this way rather than the other, because I think we would be awake for roughly 4 hours if it was the other way.
Be absolutely impossible.
But yeah, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks, man. I get my first paycheck on Friday, which is what I'm really looking forward to.
Ooh. You're just going to quit right after that? You get one and you're done?
Yeah, I'm going to invest it and then I'll be set for life.
Sounds about right. You know those high-paying government jobs.
You know what? Keep this rolling. I'm going to edit out, like, the majority of this space that I'm going to put my microphone down for, but I left a giant glass of wine in the other room, and you drinking that beer made me realize that I did that. So I will be right back.
Please keep this in.
Oh, I will. Wine has been achieved.
I'm proud of you. mainly for this and not so much the job thing, but, you know, for something.
I missed that. I didn't have my headphones in.
It was really nice, so don't go back and listen to it.
I'll probably edit it out. We don't want to seem soft.
True. So yeah, in a deviation from normal, I think we're going to talk about some movies, music, and TV this week.
We'll get to burritos at the end, definitely, yes, this time.
We promise. But yeah, so I have been in a little bit of a lull seeing movies. I no longer live four blocks away from a theater, so that makes it slightly tougher. But I did manage to see Infinity War in the last month.
I was actually shocked when you saw Infinity War. I knew you were going to see it. I didn't think you were going to see it that soon after you promised to see it.
So I, it was like a Thursday during the week. There was a 5 o'clock showing at a theater directly next to my office. And so at lunch, I went and bought tickets and then left work a little after 5 and got there right as the movie started. So it worked out pretty well, actually.
Yeah, I too have been in a movie lull because, you know, work started. So I can't go watch like Tuesday noon movies.
Yeah, you would you would text me and be like, hey, I'm going to go see You Were Never Really Here. And for me, it'd be like, you know, 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. And I was like, all right, you do you, man. But yeah, I saw Infinity War. It was long. It was noticeably long. And I thought they did a really good job as someone who has not seen the previous movies, of doing the let's get all the plot out of the way right at the beginning and catch everyone up to speed, so they're at least somewhat knowledgeable about what's going on.
You mean you don't need like a 35-minute primer from me?
Yes, I mainly blocked that out. But yeah, it was a little different than I was expecting. Having not really watched much of the universe before, I didn't really know which characters would be terribly important. I know you gave me your whole primer and everything, but I didn't realize like Doctor Strange would be one of the most pivotal characters of the entire movie.
Yeah, I also didn't really know that going in, but his powers kind of make him important in general. Plus, he had an Infinity Stone, so I guess he kind of had to be important. But
so that'll kind of lead into my first real question about the movie. So overall, I liked it. It was a good action movie. I thought some of the bigger pieces were really cool. I kind of lost it when it got down into the minutiae of everything. There were a few side quests that I thought were pretty wholly unimportant, and really added to like a 2.5 hour long movie. But as a whole, I was like, you know, I went and saw it. I was happy I saw it. It wasn't like I was, you know, I walked out angry or anything. But my first big gripe, and I think I texted you right after I saw the movie, was that it's never really clear who is powerful and who is not. There seems to be sliders in every fight that in this fight, Iron Man is going to be super powerful, but in the next one, he'll be fucking useless for whatever reason. And there's no consistency whatsoever.
I think that's just for convenience and because we have no concept of how powerful these superheroes are anyway, so they can kind of just do that and most people aren't going to bring it up, but then they're assholes like you.
True, but it's like Scarlet Witch gets like punched in the head once and is out for 15 minutes and then like knocks over that giant drill thing 4 seconds later.
Yeah, so she doesn't have any like protective powers except for whatever she can manipulate with her mind. And whatever.
Wouldn't that be everything? So she doesn't get hurt by someone punching her in the head?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. But maybe she was caught off guard a little bit.
I'm not going to give you that one. I like a lot of these big, like, battle movies, I actually thought the last fight was the weakest. I thought this.
I agree.
I thought this in Black Panther too. Like the waterfall scenes in Black Panther were really cool, but once they got to like the giant all out, that was the what conveyor belt fight scene. I was like, all right.
Yeah, it was like a maglev.
Yeah.
Train.
Yeah, it was fine. I thought Thor was probably the best character in the movie.
There was some real emotional weight to his story that was really lacking from some of his... Like, overall, I think his movies in the universe are the ones that I like the least.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of exciting to see him get a movie that was pretty good in Thor Ragnarok and then get a pretty good, like, emotionally weighty role in this one.
Yeah, I thought him and Rocket were good. That little team up worked really well. I thought Spider-Man was good. I thought he had another, you know, emotional narrative to it. And I think that worked.
I think you would actually like the Spider-Man Homecoming movie.
Okay.
There's a lot of Spider-Man fatigue just because of how many times it's been done, but I honestly think that's my favorite Spider-Man since maybe the second Tobey Maguire one.
Okay. You're not a big Andrew Garfield man?
No.
As positive I am about Thor in this movie, the whole side project with the Peter Dinklage being the, like, caster of... That was fucking terrible.
That didn't work.
No. It was like, you know, Thanos came and ruined everyone, except literally one person could fix all the things that had been done. It's like, okay, just... It'd be easier if it's like, all right, I have to go to this planet to pick up the weapon. Oh, here's the weapon. Okay, bye.
I did like that... It gave Thor the whole, like, he has given everything he could possibly give. He's lost everybody he could possibly lose. Mm-hmm. And all he has left is to try and save the world, whether or not it means losing his own life. So I kind of liked that, but the way that they got to it was kind of rough.
Yeah.
Although I did like Groot using his arm as the handle for the axe.
Yeah, I thought.
Oh, by the way, like heavy spoilers for this. By the way, we didn't give a spoiler warning, but if you haven't seen Infinity War by now, then like you're never gonna see it.
Yeah, punch in a spoiler warning before these two. I'd say just add one in.
Yeah.
As far as the ending goes, I think I texted you this too. I talked with Nate about it a little bit. And it's
probably
really
the right one to talk about.
Yeah, it's really hard to divorce the real world effects of these movies from an ending. It's like, you know, when Black Panther dies at the end of this, it's like, oh, he'll be back.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of realize how hard it is to write for these movies then, because you can't really have emotional deaths, because it literally means losing billions of dollars for a... You know, movie company. It's a weird dynamic that I don't really know how to fix.
Yeah, I don't know if it needs fixing per se. I think it was Andy Greenwald who made this point on The Watch, where this is kind of how comic books work. Like, people die and they get resurrected all the time. Like, that's just what comic books are like. And I guess seeing that fleshed out on screen is interesting, because we haven't really seen anything of this scale happen before. And I mean, we don't know if everybody's coming back, if people like Gamora, who died before the finger snap, are coming back. But I think it did have some, even though it doesn't have staying power, it has a little bit of weight to it.
Mm-hmm. But also, the only, you know, the only one's death who I cared for is Spider-Man, because they actually had emotion behind it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, regardless of whether he's coming back or not, you still got to see him die.
Yeah.
And you got to see Tony's reaction to that. And whether he's coming back or not, that's still like an incredibly emotional moment.
Yes. One last thing. I understand why they wrote the Peter Quill character as it is, but I thought, you know, him not being able to keep his cool, even though it might have been in line for who his character was just shit writing, you know? Yeah,
it was frustrating. Definitely the most useless character in the movie.
Yeah, and he wasn't even funny enough to offset that he, you know, as a plot point, fucks everything up. And you have to be really, really redeemable for that, and I don't think he was in the movie.
No, but for sure. I think that's one of the easy frustrations. But at the same time, I think you're supposed to be frustrated at him.
Yes, and I will give you that.
So it's not necessarily a miss. If I were Chris Pratt, I'd probably be pretty pissed that that's how you're going to write my character for this movie. And he probably didn't deliver his best performance because of that.
No. Yeah, the other thing is I'm not terribly excited to see what happens next. You know, if this kind of ended everything, I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, this could literally just... I am a little excited to see what happens next because I think there are going to be... I think this was the faint before there's a real, like, death knell for some actual characters.
When their contracts run out?
I don't even necessarily know about their contract situations, but I do think that there are going to be some serious emotional stakes for the next movie, but at the same time they could just say, nah, we're going to keep going with this and just do it. But I think in general people are probably pretty fatigued with this lineup, so I mean, good time to move on anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. Speaking of fatigue, I saw Solo this weekend, which has been horrifically underperforming at the box office. I saw it at a gentleman's 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday.
I thought you were going to say you saw it at a gentleman's club.
No, but I watched it. I enjoyed it while I was in there. The first 30 minutes are pretty rough as far as screenwriting goes. But I thought it was pretty good. Everyone was... Yeah. Beforehand was shitting on Alden Ehrenreich for not being able to pull it off. And I don't know whether it's they shot it in sequence or they meant the character to do this, but he seemed to get better at acting like Alden Ehrenreich, or like Han Solo, as the movie went on.
Yeah, I think what I was going to say about that is I mean, I heard the same things too. I heard that Lord Miller had to scrap a lot of what he did because it was so much like Ace Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't pique my interest exactly, and I think everything that happened behind the scenes had a lot to do with why this movie isn't performing well at the box office. I'll just say I really enjoyed it as well. It probably not as great of a film achievement as some of the previous ones, but it was good, like good little romp.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
But I think my feeling toward Alden Ehrenreich was that my expectations were so low, that I was distracted by it for about, probably like what you said, the first 20 or so minutes.
Don't think it helped that the screenwriting was bad.
Yeah, I mean,
the escape too. From that planet. So my favorite thing, if you just watch the pacing of the scene where him, and I forget Emilia Clarke's character, I forget her name.
Not important.
But... Well, it actually might be, because she does not die.
Yes, which is something that I absolutely... Spoiler alert.
Again, we're throwing it in front. So if you see the scene where he comes back with the fuel, or again, forget what it's called.
Just the things that don't matter.
He comes back, they kiss, he's like, okay, we can't talk about it here. Goes, like, around the corner. They start talking. They hear one noise. They go, like, a step farther. They hear another noise. They go one more step to the corner. It's like, all right, this is just bad plotting of a scene. Like, we get that they're skittish, but they're not moving. This is just, like... There are so many unnecessary cuts for a very simple scene And I was like, I get that they're trying to add tension, but it's pretty useless.
Yeah. But I overall was not distracted by Alden Ehrenreich's performance. I mean, one of the things is that Harrison Ford is perhaps the most charismatic actor in the history of acting, and just like drips with overconfidence and is the perfect person for that role.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of checked out of the early scenes and started having like thoughts of, should I be upset that Alden Ehrenreich isn't going to kill this role? What actors could have been better? And the only actors I could think of with the charisma to pull it off were way too old to pull it off, like George Clooney, Brad Pitt, probably Robert Downey Jr. I can't think of actors.
Do you think someone like Robert Pattinson could have pulled it off?
I have no idea. I've really only seen him in Harry Potter.
True. I mean, in Good Time, he's a like terrific actor. And he seems to have at least some point of charisma. But I get what you're saying. There are points in the movie where I think he does deliver really, really good Han lines. Like the when they find out Chewie's age, he's like, you're 142? You look great. Like, I think that was a well-delivered line that, like, fit his character and really worked. I thought their meet-cute was done pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you could see it coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
Just like almost everything in this movie, there were a couple of good misdirects that I thought worked really well. That you had it in the back of your head that things that were probably going to happen, but still worked. And that's good plotting.
Yeah. Like the first card game of Ciroc between Lando and Solo, where you just expect him to win and get the Falcon.
I like that. Yeah.
Lando was good, but he was all over the place as far as a
very
character.
Very uneven, both from a writing and performance standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I thought overall I really liked Donald Glover's performance. But I mean, it's weird when you see him go from this smarmy kind of overconfident character to trying to act like he cares about this robot that he hadn't really been paying that much attention mm-hmm. to earlier. I feel like the emotional stakes weren't really set up well.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked the character of L3, but I never felt emotionally attached enough to care that this robot died and became a part of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Which is a really nice retcon that I liked.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering this correctly, I think there are times in the original trilogy where like R2-D2 is plugged into the Millennium Falcon and kind of like talking to it.
Yeah. No, I thought that was retconned really well. Kira is Emilia Clarke's character, and I thought her whole arc actually fit well with who Han is later. You know, he got betrayed by the... Well, not fully betrayed by... Betrayed by the person he loved and is then kind of his own person after that.
I would say my rule of thumb for these prequels... we'll talk a little bit about the Star Wars oversaturation and whether or not we're feeling that, but my guide for this is going to be whether or not the film enhances the movies that came before it, and I think this does. Maybe not as much as Rogue One did for me, but it really does add some background, some like actual meaningful background to a character that we've known for a long time.
Yeah. The how he got his name was a little ham-fisted.
Yeah.
That one...
There were some audible groans in the audience when I was seeing it.
That was a little much. They also never show him learning how to be a pilot. I guess he's just good, you know? That was a little weird.
Kind of the same way with Luke.
Yeah. But I think the train heist scene was really cool. I liked that a lot. I think the ending got a little bit too much. You're double crossing me. No, you're double crossing me. No, you're double crossing me.
I mean, I kind of liked that. It's like a bunch of thieves trying to steal from each other, and like you get that overlap.
Yeah, they also did the Han shot first thing well at the end.
I loved that.
Yeah. I kind of knew it was coming,
Oh, I absolutely did.
but I think they put it in context really well.
Yeah.
It wasn't
That
like,
could have been very forced. I was actually waiting like the entire movie for that.
yeah.
I was thinking it was probably going to be in like a bar scene and try and recreate that whole thing, and then did it
Yeah.
very well.
Yeah, I liked it, you know, but I think to go to the oversaturation point now, like I didn't see it until 3 weeks after it came out.
Yeah.
And
I think I saw it. I think I saw it the same day you did.
I am someone who really enjoys Star Wars movies. So what does that say about the franchise when I am waiting 3 weeks in order to see it?
I think it has more to do with the fact that it's not a prequel or a sequel. It's not in the direct trilogy. It's not released around Christmas time, which is kind of when people all go home and watch with their families or their friends who they grew up watching these things with. It's just kind of the middle of spring, summer. Kind of in no man's land in terms of like release time. Plus, you mix that with all that behind the camera drama, and I think you get just the worst case scenario for the studio, which I don't really care about all that much because they're going to keep
True.
making these no matter what.
Also, there was Tandy Newton out of nowhere in this movie.
I actually knew she was going to be in this.
I had literally no idea she was in this.
So I was sitting next to my friend Ben, and like while the scene was happening, he's like elbowing me. He's like, isn't that Maeve?
We can have a Westworld talk in a couple of weeks when the series is over.
Yeah, I think that's a good time to revisit. Before we get off Star Wars, and while I'm talking, speaking of my friend Ben, this mostly goes
Ben
out to
Solo.
Ben and Neil. They really did not like The Last Jedi, and Neil recently listened to our first episode and disagreed with me having that on the list. I believe you had it on there as well. They thought that the movie ruined the character of Luke, and to that I say Luke was always a whiny little bitch, so
Gotta
why
get the
do you care
power
if they ruined
converters.
why do you care if they ruined that character?
Yeah, I am 100%
I
with
think it
you.
was like if you project out like what that character is going to be like in 30 years, like and he spends that time alone by himself on an island, like yeah, that's what he's going to be like.
Yeah, it was a romanticized version of what they idealized onto Luke Skywalker. And he's just kind of a whiny kid who has some great powers and cares for his friends. And when he failed that, he went and kind of went silent. I'm with you on this. We can debate them at another time if we want to have like a 15th Star Wars podcast on this. But I
Look out
think.
for burritos and other less important things. Talk Star Wars, our separate podcast that we'll be releasing weekly.
I do like the idea of a spin-off that comes out way more frequently than the actual thing. But yeah, I mean, it was a good movie. I enjoyed the entire time I was there. It felt kind of inconsequential. I guess we should talk about the Darth Maul appearance.
Yeah, that confused me a whole lot, and I didn't really understand it until I read some things after seeing the
So,
movie.
yeah,
And by read some things, I mean heard some people talking about things that they read.
I have maybe like 10 more percent into the Star Wars lore, or whatever you want to call it. So basically, he doesn't die in Phantom Menace. He gets his legs replaced by robot spider legs.
So, The thing that I didn't realize until like the very end of the movie is that they're gonna make a sequel to this.
Yeah.
I thought that Emilia Clarke was going to die. I thought it was going to tie up pretty nicely, especially since they were talking about Han going to join up with what seems like Jabba.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was going to tie up pretty nicely. And then about like 10 minutes left to go in the movie,
phones into Darth,
sets up very, very well for a sequel. And I think I'm going to be there for it.
I don't know if it's going to be a direct sequel, but I think there's definitely going to be some more Kira stuff in spinoffs in the future. I don't know if it's going to be Solo 2 or, like, you know, another movie in this time frame, you know?
I just think we didn't get a whole lot of Lando, and I don't know if he doesn't necessarily tie into
the I like him as a side Solo's character journey. Way better than a main.
Yeah, I think a Boba Fett movie would be really disappointing.
I just want a bounty hunter movie. I want Zuckuss and Forlom. I want Bosk. I want Dengar. I want IG-88. I just want all of them in like the weirdest Ocean's 8 spinoff possible.
So I think we should tie up, or we should end our Star Wars discussion here, segue into Ocean's 8, which neither of us saw. What'd you think?
Acceptable.
All right, yeah, me too. Actually, I'll probably end up seeing that.
Oh, I'm 100% going to see it.
Before we podcast next.
Yeah, so the movies I want to see that are coming up are Hereditary.
I'm so in on Hereditary. Give me the scariest, most fucked up shit and put me in a theater for it.
Yeah, with Colin Stetson doing the eerie soundtrack the entire time in. In a similar vein, I'm very excited for The Incredibles 2.
I believe I'll be seeing that this weekend.
Yeah, I might see it. It might take me a week or so, but I'll see it. And as a total aside, Todd Terjay? I've talked about him a little bit. When I describe his music, I describe it as the entry scene into the island in Incredibles 1. When he's on the jet. And I think that's pretty accurate.
Let it be known that I was the first one to mention him on this podcast.
Oh, shit, you're right. Well, we got to cancel it now. but yeah, I'm going to see Hereditary. I'm going to see The Incredibles. There are a few other smaller movies that look interesting. But yeah, I think that's it for movies for right now.
Want to segue into music?
I don't think it's a segue if you just say, do you want to segue? I think that's just transitioning.
It's
not a smooth
segue. It's just a...
so a shit ton of music has come out in the last month. Some of it very good. Some of it intriguing and confusing. And some of it pretty disappointing. To start off strong, the first in the series of Kanye... sponsored / produced / brainstormed projects was Pusha T's new album Daytona, which came out 3 weeks ago at this point. I think something like that.
Let me just say there aren't many albums that would drop at, I guess, midnight on the East Coast, 9 o'clock my time, that I would stay up to listen to. But this is one of them.
You stayed up until 9:45 to finish the album.
Oh, I didn't see it until 10, so I stayed up until 10:21, 20 whatever.
Man, you know, that's dedication right there. I fucking love Daytona. Awesome. Really don't have any negative things to say about it whatsoever. With Pusha's last two projects, there have been songs that are, you know, some of my favorites of the year, and then a decent amount that are fine. And in this, he has 7 songs that are all as good as he can do, that flow into each other well, that have great production. Kanye killed it doing the production for this album.
Probably more so than he did on his own album.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a second. But... I don't know. It's a concise project from someone who has had trouble doing full lengths before. And I think I've listened to that album more than any other, you know, that I can remember within the first couple weeks of release.
So I think that The Games We Play might be my new favorite Pusha T track, which is saying a lot because he has probably like 15 tracks that are among my top 50 favorite hip hop tracks of all time.
Are we counting Clips?
Yeah, probably.
It's up there. It's not King Push. It's not Nostalgia. It's not Crutches, Crosses, Caskets. But it is very good.
It's my new number one until I over-listen to it, and then it goes back to being like number five.
That's fair. No, I don't know. It's so as a whole, all of the Kanye related albums have been 7 songs. And on this one, every second of those 21 minutes is used up for a purpose. And on Ye and Kids See Ghosts, while they do have really, really good moments, I don't think the 7 track format fits quite as well with what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna make your album 7 tracks long, it has to be tight, and it has to be like a 12 track album that you just kind of picked the just okay songs out of and condensed mm-hmm. it to this killer album. And Ye kind of misses on the first track, and that kind of, I don't know about you, but it kind of took me out of it. Yeah, it's a
good album. I Thought About Killing You is one of my favorite songs on that album.
I did not like it at all, especially toward the end.
The actual song part?
Yeah.
I don't know. I really think that I Thought About Killing You, at least the opening, sets a good tone for what he's feeling. This kind of scatterbrained, angry, like hurtful tone. I like the second half of it. I know that you don't, as you just said 4 seconds ago. But I
how would you know that?
I think it works pretty well. It's not his most lyrically coherent album. But I think Yikes is a very, very good track on its own that would have fit well in The Life of Pablo or any of those kind of I mean, it's a 3-minute song with a killer hook, one of the best hooks he's had in a very long time, and good verses, you know.
Yeah, so the Life of Pablo was the first Kanye album, aside from maybe 808s and Heartbreak, that I was not excited for. I had a little bit of Kanye fatigue at that point, and it came out, and I probably took months before I listened to it, because I believe it released on Tidal, and I made no effort to seek it out, so I just kind of waited until it was on Spotify, and then by the time I got there, I had no craving to listen to it more than once or twice, and I think I've probably only ever listened to it about 5 times.
No, I've definitely listened to it way more than that. Hold on.
You gotta what?
Hold on. I've listened to that album probably 20 times in full.
Okay. It's just like, it's track by track, it's hit or miss for me.
I think the highs are incredibly, incredibly high.
Okay, well, we're not talking about The Life of Pablo. So I kind of carried that fatigue over into this album, and I didn't really make an effort to listen to it until about a week after it came out, and I've listened to it twice now. But for the most part, I like it, and I see it as kind of a pushback against what he tried to do in The Life of Pablo, which was very hit or miss, and he tried to make it all hit, which is what he succeeded in doing, what he and Pusha succeeded in doing on Daytona. And I think it was just like slightly off.
Yes, it is not my favorite Kanye album, and it's probably, I mean, my second from last. I still think 808s is my least favorite Kanye album.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people really like that album, but
also just never any just album never with Drunken Hot Girls and Barry Bonds back to back automatically gets like 15 marks off, because those are two of Kanye's worst songs of all time.
Yeah, but Graduation, the rest of it is awesome.
So. Yeah, but those two are so bad.
Yeah, you just skip them.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to do like a full Kanye ranking, but it's definitely toward the bottom. But he is, you know, kind of graded on a curve because his previous stuff has been so incredibly successful. And
I think, I mean, it's toward the bottom more as a result of how good his other stuff was. Like you said, graded on a curve. I would probably put it a little higher than you. I think I probably, just based on talking to you right now, probably enjoyed it a little bit more than you, but not to a serious degree.
Yes, I will agree with you on that one. Did you end up listening to Kids See Ghosts?
No, and I probably won't.
It's worth a listen. Again, it's 20-something minutes. I liked it a little less than Ye and a decent amount less than Daytona. I've never been a big Cudi fan, but he is...
Don't act like you weren't a Cudi fan sophomore year of college.
Can you say that again? You cut out.
Don't act like you weren't a Cudi fan sophomore year of college, because everybody was.
I liked... what's the one song?
Pursuit of Happiness?
Yes. Yes, I like that song. I did not have Men on the Moon. I thought he was fine.
Fair enough. I've enjoyed some of the Cudi guest appearances on Kanye's tracks in the past... however many albums he's been on.
Mm-hmm.
But never, I've literally never listened to a Cudi song that came out after I graduated college.
Yes. There are moments on Kids See Ghosts that are really, really good. But again, it's something that I don't think they utilize that runtime very well. There are tracks. The ending track, I think, is really, really great. They have a, like, Kurt Cobain sample from one of his, like, documentaries that they use to good effect.
I mean, and that's why I love Kanye as a producer, because he'll pull things from wherever, and he'll pay whatever it costs to do it.
Yes.
If it fits in the song that he's trying to make, that's what he'll do.
Yeah, you know me. I personally enjoy long songs. But there's a song called Reborn on this that's like 5.5 minutes long that needs to be 3.5 minutes long.
Well, yeah, we had this conversation about Justin Timberlake, where there are different ways you can use the length of your song and where it doesn't, where it feels like every part of it's necessary. Or you can be Justin Timberlake and use the last 2 minutes as a refrain.
Yeah, this one was just, it looped the chorus so many times that I was like, all right, I'm done with this. My personal ranking is how they were released. So Daytona, then Ye, then Kids See Ghosts, with Daytona as the clear winner of these.
I'll agree regardless of my opinions of Kids See Ghosts, because I've already made up my mind on it.
Yeah. Also, Pusha T is top 5 don't fuck with this person of all humans.
Yeah, we didn't really touch on the Pusha T Drake beef, but I mean, I don't care about Drake. I feel like so many people love Drake.
I like Drake's music.
So many people, a lot fewer, but a lot of people hate Drake. And then a bunch of people are neutral about Drake. I am in a much smaller group of people who literally don't care at all about Drake.
I think if you're reading this now, It's Too Late is a fantastic album. He's had some other really,
like
really good
three
singles.
Songs on that.
I think he's had some really, really good singles. Nice for What This Year is an awesome song. But Yeah, just don't fuck with Pusha T. I think that's all we need to say.
Yeah, we don't have to. So, speaking of albums that you have listened to a lot in a short period of time, I think this Courtney Barnett album is that for me. Between that and Daytona, I've been really crushing those two.
Just back and forth?
Yeah. Going on, mostly on my commutes, I listen to podcasts, but sometimes on the ride home, I'll need to just jam out to some music, or on the weekends, I like to put music on in the car when I'm driving to the beach or whatnot.
You're the only human that likes putting music in this car while he goes to the beach. So I'm glad you've innovated that field for us all.
But those two albums in particular have been really hitting the spot for me. I think Courtney Barnett is a really interesting artist because she doesn't necessarily make the most musically complex music, but it's very catchy in a way that doesn't seem like she's trying to be pop music. It has a very specific aesthetic to it, and she works her way around that really well. And I mean, lyrically, nothing super complex either, but some good themes in there, some good, like, very good songwriting craft without being too complex, and it's just very easy to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, she's incredibly musically talented, and she manages to keep the songs messy in her own way without being out of control.
That's a really good way of saying it.
I forget where I saw it, but it was online somewhere, and it was the end of Nameless Faceless, which is one of the first singles off the album. And it's like, yep, it's a Courtney Barnett song, because at the end it just sounds like all the instruments quit at once. And it's not like an ending, they just all give up at the same time, and that's just kind of how the song ends.
So I didn't listen to any of the singles as they were released.
You have much more restraint than I do.
Nameless Faceless is probably my favorite track on the album.
For me, it's City Looks Pretty.
That's probably my third favorite.
Sunday Roast is really good. And then
I'm going to look this up because I'm really bad at song titles when I'm not actually looking at them.
That's why I am looking at them.
Yeah, well, you're more prepared than I am. Let's see. Charity is a big time hit for me. Need a little time, also very good. Pretty much like the first five tracks are just like all killer, no filler, and then it hits the sixth track, which is I'm Not Your Mother, I'm Not Your Bitch, which I skip
most of the time. I understand why it's on there, but because it adds to the kind of thematic importance of the album, but as a song, it is not, you know, not the one you're going to go back to over and over.
Yeah. And then the second half of the album is really just about it winding down, which I think it's pretty successful in doing, though maybe the tracks aren't as memorable. It's just an eminently listenable album, and it's one of those ones that I'm going to continue to revisit probably year after year.
Yeah. I don't think it has a song I like as much as Depreston off her first album, but I think it's, it's a well-crafted album, and the only song that I don't, you know, want to listen to is I'm Not Your Mother. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty rousing success. Another artist that came out with an album that I found very, very successful was the new Parquet Courts album.
I really liked it as well.
Wide Awake. They have had some, like, a lot of B minuses. I thought their first album was an A, Light Up Gold. I think that's the name of the album. But they've had some, you know, a bunch of middling records, and I think they really, really nailed this one. Total Football is a great intro track, even though they besmirched the name of one Tom Brady at the end of it. I think that's forgivable. They have a bunch of different styles mixed in. You know, Mardi Gras Beads is like a 1950s, you know, surfer ballad almost. Freebird 2 is, you know,
this is probably my favorite track on the album.
I have a clear runaway for a favorite track on this album.
Which one is that?
What do you think it is?
Oh, geez. Well, now I don't remember which ones are which because I haven't listened to that album in a couple weeks. But let's go with Before the Water Gets Too High.
No, it is Tenderness, the final song, where they mimic the piano and the vocal throughout the chorus. I think that's the best song.
That is
they've
one
ever
of your
written.
Favorite devices.
Yeah,
is when an instrument follows the
but only
melody
only
of the
to
vocals.
Correct effect. I can't do it the whole time. Only when it's added in as a harmonious effect.
So you know what song I think is the perfect representation?
Killer Crane
of that?
By TV on the Radio.
No, I think it's Raising the Skate by Speedy Ortiz.
Ooh, that's a good one too. Yes, I 100% agree with that. But yeah, Wide Awake is funky and kind of off kilter. Almost Had to Start a Fight is classic Parquet Courts. Yeah, this album was definitely a return to form, for them. And they crafted an album that even the songs that I'm not absolutely in love with are very, very good.
Yeah. When the songs aren't A-plus songs, they're good songs that link at least a couple songs together. I am not somebody who revisits Parquet Courts a whole lot. I thought like a couple of their albums in the past have been pretty good, but not something I usually go back to. This one is definitely something I'm going to revisit. One of the most important things musical artists can do is create an aesthetic, and this one kind of just had me thinking of like old Ramones albums.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason that just really hit the spot for me.
Yeah. And I was a little, you know, wary going in, and it's just like, oh, are we going to get another mediocre album? But no, they nailed it. Do you want to talk a little bit, cause I know you like them more than I do, about the new Arctic Monkeys album?
Yeah. I think In a similar way to the Courtney Barnett album, it starts off really well with a few good tracks, but unlike Courtney Barnett's album, it really doesn't wind down well. But like I was saying with Parquet Courts, it created an aesthetic, which they could rest on their laurels and do any of the things they've done in their previous albums over again and be successful with it. And I think it's pretty cool that they don't do that. They keep making weird and interesting music. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think this is probably one of their weakest albums, but that's not really an indictment of them because so many of their albums have been so strong. So I mean, I like the way that it features Alex Turner's voice. He's one of the best crooners going today. He is, for somebody who started off as this kind of punky talk yelling club music kind of singer, the fact that he's developed himself into just a really good vocal talent is impressive, and I like that this kind of features his voice. Also, a lot of the lyricism is off the charts good, so I mean, overall, worth a listen.
Yeah, I wasn't terribly hot about this album. The piano crooner thing wears off really quickly for me, and there's not enough interesting songwriting to keep me there the entire time. It is something where if I hear a song here or there, I'm like, oh, this is not bad, but doing a whole album of that kind of feels like a slog for me.
Yeah, I agree. I got sick of it, like, halfway through. But If it had been one of those 7-track albums, it might have been good.
Sorry, can you say that again? You cut out.
If it had been one of those 7-track albums, it would have been pretty good.
Oh, yeah. You know, maybe Kanye and Alex should talk. You know, they're constant collaborators, right?
Yeah.
So the Father John Misty came out with a new album as well. It is way more concise than his last album, Pure Comedy, which was much more eloquent's not the right word, but much more elongated with his infamous ramblings. And this one felt a lot tighter and a lot more edited. And I feel like that has its benefits and its downfalls. I think it starts off really well. I forget the name of the first song. Hold on, let me look it up real quick. Hang Out at the Galas is one of his better songs that he's released in recent years. And there are a lot of high highs, but, you know, a lot of what he's really good at are these croony songs, like you said, for Alex, and those are a little bit absent on this.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the album. It's not something that I'm going to revisit a whole lot. It's not in my current rotation, but something that's super important to me is lyricism and thoughtfulness in lyricism, and that's one of the things that he does better than almost anybody else is he creates these aesthetics with his words. Just a very talented songwriter in that respect, and he's funny, scathing, sometimes sincere, maybe, we don't know, but it's at least interesting to listen to.
Did I tell you about the time I accidentally saw him in concert?
No.
So it was at a food and music festival in Brooklyn called The Great Googa Mooga, that my friend had free tickets to. And we had all gone out pretty heavily the day before and were not feeling great. And so we get some, like, pork buns to eat and, you know, these little really good stands throughout the thing. And I didn't terribly know who Father John Misty was. I had some idea that he was, you know, a former member of Fleet Foxes and all that. But I never heard his first album, was it Fear Fun? And he was the most insufferable fucking asshole I've ever heard make stage banter. At one point he stops, like, you know, it's a food festival, so we should probably talk about our favorite foods. Mine is air. And I was like, oh my God, go fuck yourself. though Matt and Kim came on after him and they were so much worse. So
I can't with Matt and Kim.
We left. We couldn't deal with that. But I like this album. It'll make the list. It won't be top of the list, but it'll make it. It's a very solid outing and, you know, more edited than his last one, which has benefits and downsides. So I'm going to let you take the floor for this one for a second, but, because it is your favorite artist of all time. So Laura Marling, released a new side project called Lump, which has one of the worst album covers I've seen in a long time. And one of the worst single videos I've seen in a long time.
So you're not a big fan of the Yeti?
No. I showed it to my friend. I was like, ignore the video, listen to the song. And she just goes, I can't ignore the video. It's making me hate the song. But anyway, I think you should give a little background about this project.
Yeah, so it's Laura Marling and this guy named Mike Lindsay from a band called Tongue with two G's. Never heard anything of theirs, but whatever happened, it works on this album. Laura Marling's, as Zach said, one of my favorite artists of all time. Probably not my favorite of all time, but I'll at least give a fair shake to anything she puts out. And usually what she plays is mostly like folk music of sorts. She's departed from that a little bit at certain times. And I think what I was most surprised about in this album that it's, despite being different from what she usually does, is still at its heart pretty quintessentially Laura Marling. despite maybe what's going on musically in the background, she's still writing similar songs, but not in a tired way, not in she's retreading or anything like that. It's another short album. It's, I believe, 7 tracks, but the last track is like a credits track, so it's basically 6 tracks.
And it's 6 tracks.
And I like them all. It's, like I said, a little bit musically different. Laura Marling plays bass on this one. Usually she plays a finger-picked guitar. She adds a lot in terms of her bass licks. Her songwriting is on point still. She's one of my favorite lyricists going. And really kind of flexes on her vocal range, like she in a way that she hasn't done in previous albums. She has some songs that really showcase the lower range of her voice, and then a couple moments where she showcases how her upper register is.
Yeah,
she still has some pretty good control up there. So
the Contemporary is her best high octave song in a long time, the lead single off of it. It's something that I wish she had done a little more of, is just kind of use her voice for more just weirder music, you know? And this is a great avenue to do it. I think we're just going to keep talking about how great short albums are, but, you know, the 6 songs that are a little bit longer, they're mostly like 5 minutes, I think, and allows her to experiment, and fuck with things and try some stuff out. And, you know, I think it works really well. Shake Your Shelter, Curse the Contemporary, and then I think May I Be the Light are my three like standouts from the album.
Yeah, I mean, kind of hard to pick standouts when there are 6 tracks, but yeah, I'm not sure which ones are which, just based on title alone. I'm really bad at this, because I always listen to songs in my car when I'm not, like, looking at the names.
But, what's a car?
Yeah, I don't know. I spend an absurd amount of time in traffic nowadays, by the way. I work on an island, and there is a bridge to get there, and everyone is trying to get there at the same time.
How long does it take you?
Anywhere from 25 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes.
That is a high variance.
Yes.
There are a few other albums we can kind of touch on. I don't terribly want to go too deep into any of these. The only one I will say is I think you'd really like the new Snail Mail album. It is a female singer-songwriter who crafted just this really, really good, you know, 4-piece indie pop, not indie pop, but indie rock light album. And I think she's pretty young, like early 20s, and has really honed in a, you know, a 10 or 11 track album where I've listened to it, I don't know, 7 or 8 times and have thoroughly enjoyed it each time. Pristine and Heatwave are the two lead singles, and I think those are the two best. No, not that. Never that. And I think those are the two ones to start with.
Okay. I mean, I'll for sure give it a listen.
For disappointing releases that have come out recently, the ASAP Rocky album, a lot of people were really excited for. I, you know, was tacitly excited. It's not that great. He has some really good ideas that you can see poke through from time to time, but there's just so much bullshit and just bad ideas that are thrown in there as well. It's worth one listen and then picking off the 2 or 3 songs that are on a 14 track album and then getting rid of the rest, you know.
That's usually what I do with albums like that. I've constructed a couple of pretty extensive hip-hop playlists in A$AP Rocky for the most part is somebody whose albums I choose a few songs and then that's the end of it. I think he can be very talented, and he sometimes assembles the correct people to be on his songs, but for the most part I'm left wanting.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I like Goldie is one of my favorite rap songs of the past many years.
One Train for me.
Yeah, One Train is up there. He has had like really, really high highs, and I think it's kind of disappointing to just get this, you know, convoluted, messy bullshit of an album, where it could be a lot better with a lot more editing. On the other side of that, I think the new Churches album is just boring. For me, like, Mother We Share is an incredible indie pop song, and then no other song they have ever released has been 75% as good.
I don't think we've ever agreed on anything more than this. I was getting ready to come out and say I don't think I've ever liked a Churches album, which is crazy because I love Lauren Mayberry as a person and like I love her voice,
mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I love them as a band or as songwriters. Mother We Share is an amazing song and I love it, but for the most part I don't really listen to anything that they put out more than once, I guess.
Yeah, I gave it one listen through and I was like, nah, this is not good. They even have a song with Matt Berninger of The National, and it's not a good song.
I listened to it and I hated it. It and is, I was so disappointed.
Empirically not a good song.
Ugh. Yeah, well, the last album that we'll talk about that I actually did listen to was the Natalie Prass album, which you suggested to both me and Nate, and I enjoyed it.
It's like soul funk light.
I was gonna say like funk is kind of the pop du jour. Mm-hmm. Like every pop song in the past 3 years that's been in the top 40 has had some influence of punk or funk in it, and this does it in a totally different way that seems a little more authentic. But I kind of have an issue, like I don't think her voice is powerful enough to carry it.
Sure.
So but overall I really enjoyed it. Like I said, aesthetic. It's a good aesthetic and it works.
Yeah, it's something I will happily put on in the background or like have on while I'm doing something else. When I like sit down and do a full like critical listen to it, doesn't stand up quite as well.
But that's kind of the category I was going to put it in, and is like a background, like a solid background thing.
Yeah, it's definitely worth listening to. Same kind of thing for the new 106 Point Never album, Age Of.
That's how you pronounce that?
I think so.
I've never tried to pronounce it.
I think it's 106 Point Never.
That makes sense, just because it sounds like a radio station. I just thought it was a really douchey band name that was like Oniatrix Point Never.
Possibly.
No, I think you're right.
That new album has really brilliant moments, but there are points where I'm lost on it. So it's something that is worth listening to. I don't know if I talked about the new John Hopkins album, Immunity, on our last podcast. But I absolutely love that. I'm going to go see him live in September in New York. He is similar to Fortet in the kind of electronic, not quite ambient, but he's definitely not like a house music person.
No, he's definitely somewhere in between. And he's one of the very few like electronic, like non-vocal artists I listen to.
Yes.
Not regularly, but it's something that I definitely put on in the background.
Immunity is really, really great, and I would highly recommend it for anyone that is relatively into electronic music. The The other one I think is very old that I put on here right when I first started. Mark Kozlik put out another album, Shocker.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
There are some really good songs on there. There are some really awful songs on there. I think it's self-titled. Give a listen if you're into it. If you're not, like you, just ignore it. But I wanted to get that on the podcast, so...
I don't think we've ever disagreed on an artist more than him.
Oh, that is... So we agree the most on Churches and disagree the most on Mark Kozlik.
I'm glad we nailed that. Let's segue from there into something a little more somber, a lot more somber. An artist that means a whole lot to both of us and a lot of other people. Scott Hutcherson passed a few weeks ago, lead singer of Frightened Rabbit. Just one of the most talented musical artists of our generation. I don't think that's hyperbole at all. Brilliant songwriter, obviously very emotionally challenged. You could hear that in his music, but yeah, rough.
Yeah, the music is it always came off as earnest and truthful, and you know, you hear the phrase "wear his emotions on the sleeve" a lot, but I don't think it, you know, I don't think it's, there's a clearer case of that than with Scott. Midnight Organ Fight is, I think, I don't want to overstep, but like both of our, you know, one of our favorite albums of all time. It is a earnest and depressing and sad album that people can celebrate with rather than wallow in. And that's a really, really hard line to actually craft an album with. And he managed to do it really well. He had, you know, the rest of Frightened Rabbit's discography is littered with great songs, with, you know, very honest descriptions of the trouble that he was going through that eventually became too much. But I know that he clearly helped a lot of people through his music, and that he really cared about the effect that he had. And it's, I still haven't fully gone back and listened to his music because it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I tried the day after, made it into like halfway through Midnight Organ Fight and had to quit.
I was lucky enough to see they did a 10th anniversary show for that album. And it was, you know, every single person in the 1,000-person theater singing along at the top of their lungs. Everyone knew every word. It was a celebration of a very tough topic. And in the moment, he seemed happy and with it. And it was just a couple of months later that he passed. So, never feel afraid to talk. Never feel afraid to ask questions and explain how you're really feeling.
Yeah. On that note, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
It's a sad way to end an episode.
But sad way to end, but...
kind of feels disingenuous to go into anything else after that.
Yeah. Celebrate what you can and enjoy and talk.
If you're not familiar with who Scott Hutcherson is, please go listen to everything Frightened Rabbit and Owl John.
And Master System music. Too. Yeah.
There you go. That's been episode 7 of Burritos and Other Less Important Things. We kind of ran out of time, so we didn't get to talk about a couple TV shows and definitely burritos we'll get to next time.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening.
A movie that I found.